hello six pack of confidence. Been so many nights since we first met. Glad to see you brought all your friends for another night of Plastic Cup Politics.
Hello, welcome to a really weird episode of Plastic Cup Politics podcast. I'm your host, Mark LaRue, the man sitting COVID distance from me. About 2 miles away is Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD. That PhD is in political science. I will say that I'm very bad at editing this show, and it comes out super late as to when we record. And Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD, makes his drink super strong, I'm looking at. I guess we'll get to that in a moment. Hopefully I'll get this one done really quick. And I just finished editing the podcast we did the day after Christmas. So I would like to say that, you know, like, this is kind of a time-sensitive podcast. I'm going to do my best to get it out quickly as possible. But seriously, go back and listen to the one that came out just before this. You can even fast forward just to the end where Sean is talking about the cyber attack and like that kind of thing, just to get his take on it from the professional security internet analyst, something or other, bigwig, which is what he actually does, which we will get to right here in a moment. But first, I will say, at Plastic Cup Pod, if you want to interact with the show and however you're listening to this, go ahead and hit the subscribe button. That would be awesome. And then I will say, information securities analyst Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD, with that PhD in political science. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
This is the winter of our discontent. Which, you know, everyone always quotes, it was the best of times, it was worst of times, it was the best of times. And but the next line is clearly the superior line. This is the winter of our discontent. Like, that's the money right there. But everyone always talks about that. Anyway, I suppose I was doing well until a few hours ago. We'll get to that later, but, you know, tonight was actually intended to be sort of a celebratory podcast for me because I knew a couple of things were going to go fairly well over the last couple of days. And so I actually, in terms of what I'm drinking, one of my wife's lovely colleagues brought her a Christmas gift. When I tell you what it is, you'll understand why I'm drinking it and not my wine, you being Mark. It's called Choco Vine. It's not local. It says right on the bottle that it's imported.
Oh.
It is the finest blend of red wine and Dutch chocolate.
I'm pretty sure I've actually had that before.
Yeah, I am going to actually save a small glass for Jen because they did make it sweet enough that she might actually enjoy it. But I think I'm going to end up profoundly regretting this later. And that seems appropriate now for today.
I guess, yeah, I guess. Yeah, I think it is it like kind of sickeningly sweet and then it's kind of the whiny.
It's look, I don't taste any red wine in it whatsoever. And I don't want to talk a bunch of trash about it in case her colleague ever hears this. It was very sweet of her to give it to us. Super grateful. But it isn't something that it tastes like chocolate milk with some booze in it. Probably rum is what I would think, which like, hell yeah, that actually sounds pretty good, you know, every now and again, but it's, yeah. Whoo, lordy. It's different.
Oh, all right. Let's hear it for different. I am having mead. I'm drinking mead. So my friend and mentor at this point, Uva, who is the head brewer at SunUp, who I am brewing for, he is going to be leaving to start his own meadery and cidery. And so he makes tremendously good mead. And this is a ginger mead.
Uva's a Swede, I assume.
German.
German. That's an unusual name for a German.
Uva Bohr. Right. Your wife knew an Uva growing up. It was very odd. We just had that discussion, which doesn't need to be talked about on this podcast. So being the winter of our discontent, do we want to start with the good stuff or the bad stuff?
Let's start with the good stuff.
The good stuff is I was playing it very close to the vest, and I really do will have a question for you. I will tell you what I know, and that is that looks like the Georgia both seats went to the Democrats. And so that means that the House, or sorry, the Senate is now split 50-50, giving the deciding vote to Vice President Kamala Harris. Can I ask you a question right now, an earlier question? Is Mike Pence the president of the Senate?
Yes, that is the official title for the vice president.
Okay, awesome. Just making sure, because I was watching everything before we started recording on a day that's going to live in infamy, on January 6th, 2001. That is when we are recording this. And I really do think that this will be a day that we will stay in history books, like a date that people will actually remember.
Yeah, it's going to be remembered for a bunch of different things. Unfortunately, it should, well, yesterday really should be remembered for the, you know what? Thank goodness it was yesterday and not today that the Georgia runoff took place, because otherwise, an amazing accomplishment. Now, not only did they flip the presidential race in Georgia, but we've now flipped both Senate seats. So Georgia, a deep South state, has gone blue, and it cannot be solely attributed to the black vote, right? Because black people represent only 39% of the population in the state of Georgia. So that means there are a lot of white Georgians who also voted blue this time around. And many of them, it has to be said, based on the numbers, many of them probably did not vote blue before. Right. They either just started voting or they actively made the switch red to blue. That is a hell of a thing to pull off, especially in the present political climate, and completely separate from it giving us the Senate, which is holy shit. Like, if I could be inside Mitch McConnell's head when he got the news that he was going to be the minority leader in the Senate moving forward, I would have paid just about any price to be inside his head when he got that news. That you know,
hey Sean, yeah. let me say it for you. Minority leader, mm-hmm. Mitch McConnell.
Yeah,
drink to that.
I will definitely drink to that. That's fantastic. That's great. But news to my ears.
In my mind, they both happened on the same day, because until they actually certified the Ossoff. Which was
the right call, by the way. I know there are a lot of people who were pissed about that, mm-hmm. but it was the right call, because what they were waiting for wasn't just some sort of magic number, right? They were waiting for Ossoff's margin to get above 0.5, because that's the cutoff for not having to do an automatic recount, right? And if they were below that margin, then it would make sense to wait for the recount to happen before you call that race, because you do not want to get this one wrong. So they it was absolutely the right call to wait. It was frustrating for me the same way it was for everyone else. It really, you know, once they were at like 90% of the vote, 98% of the vote total was in, Ossoff still had a significant lead and they still weren't calling it. It was like, oh, come on, just fucking do it already. But it was absolutely the right thing to do to wait.
Oh boy, did that get overshadowed. Oh, let's not even get to the overshadowing part yet. Here is my question. Who is going into the voting booth and voting split ticket?
So here's the weird thing. I really never thought that was a real thing, right?
Clearly it was a thing.
So, yeah, clearly there were some voters. You know, these numbers indicate that there were some voters between November 3rd and January 5th who on November 3rd, they voted split ticket. They voted Biden, but then voted for a Republican for Senate, who then switched in this election and voted blue for the Senate. That tells you something about the behavior of Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue and Donald Trump over the course of the last 60 days.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Because, you know, to vote split ticket like that, that's a committed ideological position, right? Like, you're not doing that on a whim. That's some shit you thought about. Now, I'm very skeptical about sort of hyper rational explanations for why that's the case, right? Because they fall apart on closer examination. There's a really prime example of this. There's an opinion writer for the New York Times. He's one of their conservative. He's one of their token conservatives, right? They've got three token conservatives. One is David Brooks, who's really, let's be fair, he's not really a conservative anymore. And David and I actually had a chance to have a really good conversation at a conference that I organized in D.C. years and years and years ago. He's a very nice dude. Didn't have a whole lot of time to talk to me, but he's like a major op-ed writer for the New York Times. So can't so really blame him, right? But he was super gracious about the event and had some nice things to say about it. And we had a good conversation. So very nice guy. But like he's borderline conservative at this point. His views have evolved so much since he signed on with the Times many moons ago that it's tough to call him a legit conservative anymore. On the other hand, Ross, I'm going to fuck up his name now. But anyway, his first name is Ross. There's no other Rosses at the New York Times. You can find him if you're really interested. He's definitely still a conservative. You know, so each article that he writes is sort of, it's a very thoughtful takedown of maybe some discrete thing that Trump's doing right now, but it's all spiced with backhanded criticisms of the Democrats and liberals in Democrats in particular and liberals in general. Ross Douthat, that's his name. And then there's another one, Neil. I'm so tempted to say Neil Stevenson, but that's my friend, the author. That's not this guy. But anyway, he does a really cool like duet column with Gail Collins called The Argument. It's a lot of fun. But in his standalone column, he still makes some sort of traditional moderate conservative arguments. And he makes them despite all the evidence. So he was one of these split ticket voters, right? As recently as like 3 days ago, he was saying, hey, you know what? I still kind of want, I want Warnock to win because Kelly Loeffler's behavior has been just absolutely abhorrent. Or no. Flip that. I want Ossoff to win because he's moderate enough for me. Warnock is too much of a radical liberal. So he wanted Perdue to lose, but Loeffler, right, the billionaire's wife who went full bore MAGA over the last 60 days, he wanted her to win. And his reasoning was he wanted a check on the Biden administration via split government. Right.
Okay. That was going to be my one idea or one of my two ideas.
In that same fucking article, Mark, he bemoaned gridlock. And you hear a lot of these fuckers who talk about split government also complain about gridlock. Guess what the fuck gridlock is, motherfucker? It's Mitch McConnell owning the Senate and deciding no one else is going to do anything unless it's something he likes.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
The way this really should work, right? And this is something that these sort of these moderates, both moderate conservatives and moderate, apparently there must be moderate liberal voters out there too who are voting split ticket. They're grabbing, you know, as reasonable a con as they can from the other side and slotting them in somewhere for mixed government, right? What they're missing at this point is that it's not supposed to work. The system isn't designed to work and never could be designed to work, right? Because the failure is baked right into it. You can see it if you just look at it with sort of an unjaundiced eye. If all the time one of your sort of four main organs of government, right? We have three branches of government, but there's four main organs, right? There's the executive or the White House, there's the Supreme Court, there's the Senate, and there's the House, right? If one of those four is not just held by the opposition, but is held by an opposition that has committed itself to ensuring that nothing happens unless it's something that they approve of, that's not mixed government. That's not a check on the ambitions of your ideological opponents. That is a recipe for long-term disaster, for necrosis. It's a recipe for exactly what we have now, right? Because what's the logic that underlies the beliefs of people like Mitch McConnell and the other people in the Senate? How do they justify believing that no government action should take place unless it's one that they approve of? They justify it by saying that the other side is illegitimate. They are inherently illegitimate. They can never govern legitimately as far as these people are concerned. And that is why you have people like Mitch McConnell who will gleefully tell people behind the scenes, I will never, this is what he said last week, right? He was caught on a hot mic telling some business person that if he's leading the Senate, the Democrats will never win a vote. Not one. They will have no successes. Because in his mind, the way he justifies his behavior is entirely self-serving, but the way he justifies it, right, the sort of the way he adds nobility to it is this belief that the other side is inherently illegitimate. They are very bad people, and nothing they do can be legitimate governance. The logical conclusion of that belief, right, the step that Mitch McConnell and other sort of genteel Republican conservatives were unable to take is the one that Donald Trump and his supporters took. Because the underlying belief that justify the sort of the underlying assumption that justifies these beliefs in the stolen election, right, despite all evidence to the contrary, is that there's no way the Democrats could legitimately have won that election. They can't legitimately win elections because the American people know that the Democrats are bad. And they would never elect bad people to run our government. Right? But the assumption there is that the Democrats should never be allowed to hold power again, that the only people who can legitimately run the country are Republican conservatives. And that didn't start with Trump, and it didn't start with his supporters. It started with people like fucking Mitch McConnell. And still you have these mixed government people, as recently as 3 fucking days ago in the New York Times, making this argument that there's a benefit to split government. No. Maybe if the other side was actually reasonable, right? If we were still talking about the era of Tip O'Neill as the opposition leader under Reagan, right, where they worked hand in hand to accomplish some pretty decent stuff. And I'm no Reagan fan, as everyone who listens to this show knows. Right. If we're still back there in that era, which I'm not writing any hagiographies, this horseshit we're dealing with today starts with Ronald Reagan. It starts with Richard Nixon, but it achieves true success with Ronald Reagan, right, and becomes mainstreamed. Nixon gets driven out of office in shame, and a bunch of his handlers end up going to prison. Old Ronnie Reagan goes through the Iran-Contra scandal and manages to get away by simply saying he can't remember. Of course, we found out afterwards he had Alzheimer's. He may really legitimately not have been able to remember, but everyone else sort of got away with it too, right? Ollie North went to prison, sort of, prison light. And then, you know, he now has a successful career as a conservative commentator.
And was president of the NRA.
President of the NRA as well, yeah. So it's, you know, the whole split government is premised on unbelievably faulty logic and a really piss poor appreciation for just how degraded conservatives have become.
But also, I think it could just be old school name recognition in that. Warnock, I think Loeffler, don't even need to remember her name anymore.
Loeffler. Yeah.
Don't you have to. Doesn't matter. I saw you on MSNBC saying goodbye. That was nice. And you said that you were she said that she was going to go and contest the vote, but she decided that she wasn't going to contest the vote. And I'm like, oh, would you like to go ahead and tip your hat to the reverend on this fine occasion in front of the whole Senate? Would you like to concede? No? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're
wonderful. We've heard all we need to from you, Kelly. Bye-bye.
Right. So that's definitely something I want to get to, which is welcome to the new GOP coming out party. So I think that she was just a terrible candidate, same as McSally, terrible candidate. So I can totally see how Warnock would get more votes out of there. And Perdue, his dad was like the governor before. And so Perdue, so I guess like name recognition, but it just seems so weird to me that like in this election to see such a sway, I guess we can do. Tap dads into today, where we last left Plastic Cup Politics podcast. We were saying that there'll be like some little 2-hour thing. They're going to try to make some time happen on the 6th, but it's fine. Wasn't fine at all. I get a text from your wife going, are you seeing what's going on? And so that's when I figured out that there has been an insurrection in the United States and that Trump supporters had broken into the Capitol and had run off the people trying to conduct government business and certify Joe Biden, rightfully so, as the next president. And all hell broke loose. I really kind of have no idea.
Someone was killed, by
the way. Yeah. How do you get past security? Like, I'm watching these guys busting out windows.
In the Capitol?
In the Capitol.
You don't. You get let in. They're on video pulling the barricades aside to let them in. The cops.
What? The reasoning behind that?
They're white. And the insurrectionists, the domestic terrorists who attacked our seat of government today, are white supremacists. So you can start off. I actually need to take one step back. We need to go back to Georgia for just a second.
You got it.
Georgia and our victory there is all Stacey Abrams.
Hey.
Period. End of story. She lost an election to Brian Kemp in 2018. Really actually had it stolen from her, right? That's a legit stolen fucking election right there. Dude was Secretary of State managing the election he was running in for governor. And surprise, surprise, he ekes out a win over an incredibly charismatic opponent.
After dropping a few hundred thousand people off the voter rolls.
Yeah.
That he was in charge of.
Yeah. So she loses that election. Turns out, best thing that could have happened to her and to Georgia and to the United States, because it inspired her to flip Georgia, right? She said, all right, fuck it. If you guys are going to cheat like this, you're going to fuck around, right? You're going to find out. Fuck around and find out, right? Well, that's what they did. And she flipped the fuck out of Georgia, turned the whole goddamn state blue, man. Her organizing ground game was amazing to behold. And the victory in Georgia is entirely at the feet of Stacey Abrams and other organizers, many of them women, in the black community in Georgia. I have already seen numerous times on social media, and the nice part is that they immediately get smacked down. But I have seen a lot of very sort of overzealous Sanders supporters trying to claim, and in fact, one of them explicitly said Bernie Sanders single-handedly won Georgia by championing $2,000 checks. That one I actually had to personally reply to because that was just super gross, right? But either outright saying or sort of suggesting that Sanders was the driver behind the win in Georgia. He may have had a tiny bit to do with it, with his with the stuff he did in the Senate around $2,000 checks. If $2,000 checks played a role in winning Georgia, the person responsible is actually Donald Trump, not Bernie Sanders.
I think that Donald Trump can be hung a lot of things.
Yeah,
in this Georgia election can be hung around his neck.
Seriously, white liberals, don't be gross. All right. Georgia, the you know, you want to call it a miracle, fine. The miracle in Georgia, right, is entirely the get of Stacey Abrams and black organizers in Georgia. You need to give them credit where credit is due, and then you need to thank them for handing the rest of us the United States Senate.
So I believe it was on this podcast, I can't tell you what episode, but sometime back there when they were talking, kicking around VP candidates, that Stacey Abrams had come up and you said that she was way too green, and she is, but she at the time said that she had something else to do.
Hell yeah, she did. And I what the fuck could that be? And now I know.
Dude, she said that shit. She's got, I have another mission right now. Holy shit.
Holy shit, did she have a mission? That's fucking awesome. It's so good. That's a great take, dude. I hadn't thought of that at all. I had completely forgotten that conversation we had, and I had completely forgotten that comment from her. Seemed super cryptic at the time. Maybe a little bit of, like, sort of not really face saving, but a way to salvage a little bit of ego. Nope. Turns out she really did have a goddamn mission, and she executed the fuck out of it. So
back to the insurrection. That fuck dick from Missouri.
Josh Hawley. So this actually starts in Alabama with Mo something or other. Who gives a fuck? He's a representative from Alabama. He's the first one who came out and said he was going to object to certification. It didn't really, and no one was taking it seriously until a senator signed on. Right.
Right. Right.
And really, you know, to be honest, a lot of folks thought it was all but guaranteed that at least one senator would sign on out of personal ambition, right? Because it's such low-hanging fruit to try and get the adoration of Trump fans if you're planning to run in 2024. The question was always just which one of those potential 2024 candidates would jump first. Turns out it was Josh Hawley.
And boy, oh boy, did they find the jumpiest of the jumpy.
Yeah, they did. Man, he jumped right the fuck in.
Yeah, he was the one who was attorney general and said that he would not try to go from being attorney general to running for higher office, and then didn't fulfill that, and then decided that he was going to run for Senate, and then won in Senate, and said that he wasn't going to try to go for higher office, I mean, until the president in 2024. So,
yeah,
44 years old, though. Yeah, this guy's got a whole bright future being a dickhead in front of him.
Yeah, he has a bright future to the end of this term in the Senate.
You want to hear something weird? I was listening to Ben Sasse. I was like, I kind of like Ben Sasse.
Yeah, fucking weird, right? He's been saying all sorts of shit for the last few weeks that I was like, dude, Ben Sasse, you're all right, man. Like, at least on this one issue, you're a good dude.
Yeah. So
fucking Tom Cotton. Listeners to this show know how I feel about motherfucking no quarter Tom Cotton, right? Who during the BLM protests famously said that the military should get involved and that protesters should be given no quarter. Which means they should be killed. No one should be arrested. No one should be allowed to leave. They all die. That's what no quarter means. So everyone knows how I feel about motherfucking Tom Cotton. Tom Cotton released not just a statement saying, no, I'm not okay with this, guys. Like, took them to fucking task for what a affront to the Constitution this whole thing is. So, yeah, some people surprised us on the right.
I have so many little weird tangents to go around, such as one of my friends who was ex-military security and said that on federal grounds he had the complete go-ahead to shoot anybody that wasn't supposed to be there.
Yep. So, well, they all do.
Weird. That's just a little tiny tangent. We will keep moving on from there.
How that chick got shot.
Yeah.
One of the Capitol Police exercised that discretion because she was fucking attacking a doorway and trying to push her way into a room where lawmakers actually were. And they shot her either in the neck or the chest. It's still not entirely clear where the round hit, but she died. And fuck her. Good riddance. She's a piece of shit.
Is Dr. Sean Hayes PhD's take on that?
What other fucking, unless you are a maggot yourself, what other possible take could there be? She stormed the Capitol, right? It wasn't a protest. It wasn't some jolly little prank. Fail at an insurrection, you fucking die. That's what's supposed to happen when you mount an armed attack on the seat of government in the most powerful country on earth. You could call it impressive. I call it unbelievably suspicious thing is that more people didn't meet that same fate when they not only stormed the Capitol, but stormed the Capitol while carrying firearms. Many of them had taken the concealed firearms out that they snuck into the rally in D.C. and were openly carrying them in holsters, right? There are pictures of some of them running around inside the Capitol with fucking pistols on their hips and goddamn flex cuffs in their hands, looking for hostages to take. And only one woman got shot?
Hey, I mean, I'm the one who asked the question, so I should be ready for the answer, and I shouldn't think that if I bring up, hey, shouldn't they be able to shoot those people? I shouldn't really be that offended if one of them got shot, right?
Exactly. Pretty much, yeah.
I'm a very self-aware person. Don't worry. All I keep thinking is welcome to the new GOP, and that 1-6-2021 is the coming out party of the new GOP. Like, that's now what the GOP is. Yeah. I saw everybody, and it was so nice of the president to come and calm the American people. Oh, wait, no. Mike Pence actually came out and gave a fucking good speech in front of
Mitch Senate. McConnell.
Gave a
Mitch
good...
fucking McConnell. Twice. Mm-hmm. Two good speeches.
Yeah. The president couldn't actually fucking come and talk to the United States people.
But no, he did. He did on several occasions, on Twitter, in a video, at a rally that morning. So the rally that morning is actually what started all of this, mm-hmm. right? Because the same people who stormed the Capitol got there by marching up the mall after attending a rally that the president spoke at in the Ellipse outside the White House.
Oh, no. I get Paul Gosar's tweets. I know where he's going to be.
Oh, all right. Okay. Fuck that guy. By the way, I was going to save Paul Gosar, but let's jump right the fuck into that. So Paul, and we'll have to circle back to the president, because that's important here. But Gosar, right? So the way this goes, the way today was supposed to go, right, is that they would bring in these two big mahogany chests. And I swear to God, they're big mahogany chests. They were made in the 19th century. They're old. They're super awesome. Look like pirate chests. And they would contain all of the envelopes, the 50 envelopes in total, right? One from each state. And it is the certification of the vote from that state. It is a document that is signed by the electoral officials and the elected officials in that state. Typically, the Secretary of State and the governor both sign off on elector certification. And then, you know, the great seal of the state is affixed to it, yada, yada, yada. It's placed in an envelope. The envelope's very special. It's all magical. And it's sent off to D.C. And they are all collected together in these mahogany boxes. And it's all very majestic. In case you can't tell, I think it's all horseshit. We should have done away with it decades ago and be deciding this on the basis of a direct vote.
It would only be super cool if every time he opened one of them, he opened it from the side and blew it open like Karnak the Magic. Karnak the Great pulled it out, read it, took the next one, ripped off the side.
See, that I would let them watch. I would
right? That'd watch be great. That.
Yeah. Except, you know, the guy who would have done it that way. It was Dick Cheney. He's the guy who would have done it that way. So
Dick Cheney who came out and said that, hey, man, give it up and let's just go ahead and make this right. Dick Cheney who said that shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
They collect them all together. They're supposed to bring them in there. And then they open them in alphabetical order. Right. And so Abilama and Arkansas were first.
I think you said Abilama twice on this podcast.
Yeah, it's intentional. I had a friend from Alabama and for years, this was in high school, for years they insisted that like people from Alabama would legitimately call it Abilama all the time, like as a nickname for the state. I have no idea if that's actually true, and quite frankly, I don't give a shit. It's just a habit I picked up, and I have called it Abilama ever since. So yeah, it's deliberate the two times that I've called it Abilama.
Good to know.
All right, so Alabama and Arkansas went first, and then Arizona comes up. Arizona is one of the six battleground states, right? Again, that should tell you something about the presidency of Donald Trump, right? For all of these motherfuckers who have been moaning for 6 fucking weeks now or 8 weeks now since the election, since November 3rd, about how badly Democrats underperformed, right? Think about the performance of Donald Trump in office, because he has not only not helped them win the House, right? They made a couple of gains in the House, but the House is still firmly in the hands of the Democrat. He has now lost them the Senate. He's lost them the White House. And a couple of states that have never been battlegrounds before, right? Or in Georgia's case, has not been a battleground since 1992, went blue across the board, right? That is a fuck up of monumental proportions. It should tell you something about the myth making that's going on about the strength of Donald Trump's popular support. There sure as fuck are not 74 million Americans who think this election was stolen and want to contest it. Right? There weren't a million people in D.C. today in the streets. There were 5,000 tops. And those 5,000 fuckers, a lot of them participated in storming the Capitol and should be going not to county jail, not to some happy, fun summer camp. They should be going to fucking prison.
I would like to talk about that real quick. Because I have seen federal prosecutors. What would be the right name for a federal prosecutor? Or is that,
yeah, that's right.
Okay. From one from Kentucky, one from Illinois, that have all said that if anyone who committed a crime at the Capitol came from their jurisdiction where they are the lead prosecutor, that they will try that case. They will convict that person of federal crimes.
Yeah, and that is absolutely going to happen.
Or going out of state. Okay, good, because guess what? One of the very first things that I was starting to see was the jackhole in the bison getup,
huge
the painted
shock.
Face.
Tragically, is from fucking Arizona.
He is from Arizona, so that's what I'm going to hope is a big news story tomorrow, is what federal charges that guy, who there are pictures of him, sitting where the president of the Senate sits, taking selfies, or not selfies, but getting his picture taken plenty. Yeah, I want that guy to go to jail.
He's a neo-Nazi, by the way.
Oh, and he was harassing, he was one of the guys harassing the vote counters, who one of them is a friend of mine. And so, yeah, fuck that guy a whole bunch. But yep. Do you think we will actually see prosecutions on this?
I think that guy almost certainly ends up getting arrested and prosecuted, just because he's in way too many pictures and videos to sort of fly under the radar. The guy who broke into Nancy Pelosi's office and took selfies of himself behind her desk with his feet up, with the gun that he snuck into the Capitol, on his hip, and then stole an envelope and a piece of letterhead from her office, and then took more selfies of himself outside the Capitol, holding them up for the camera. That dude's definitely going to prison. But there are some others who, in the end, just because there were so many of them, even though their faces are right there in high definition, right, they probably, a lot of them will get away. But there will be quite a few of them who will end up facing charges, possibly at the state level, definitely at the federal level. A lot more of them will be sort of chased down by activists online. And there'll be this you, bro. Right. And a lot of them will end up losing their jobs, which we saw happen after Charlotte, and is entirely fucking appropriate. They belong in prison, not in the unemployment line. So there will be consequences for these fuckers. That difference in and of itself, right? That's what I was sort of rolling into earlier. And then I ended up backtracking myself because I wanted to make sure we sung Stacey Abrams' praises. The very first clue that the protesters, see, I'm even doing it. They're not protesters. They're domestic terrorists. So the very first clue that the domestic terrorists who attacked the Capitol building today were actually let in, right, is the difference in preparation for both the Capitol Police and the DC Police. Both groups knew that there was going to be a major protest today. Both groups, the last time they were forewarned of major protests, it was going to be a major protest in support of the Black Lives Matter movement. And they showed up in full armor with riot shields, stockpiles of tear gas, right? And fucking, M40 grenade launchers to fire the tear gas, like, you know, fucking rubber bullets. They brought the house. Today, they showed up sort of at half strength in windbreakers. And they put up some of those, the bike rack barricades, to hold back 5,000 assholes that we all know smuggled firearms into the Capitol.
And amazingly, I know this might freak people out, but they were able to Get Over Walls.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It ruins that whole build the wall idea, huh?
Yeah, because those are super effective. But there's video of the Capitol Police and the DC police moving the barricades aside.
I will say that from doing security, there are certain times when you understand you're just going to have to let that shit go. Like, you know, like regroup. So maybe that's what was taking place. Like just being understaffed and realizing that this, we're not going to be able to stop this. So
but why were they understaffed?
Well, I'm not, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that the being understaffed may be more of an issue than them actually letting them through, like saying,
yeah, except then some of those, except then some of those same cops were later caught on film taking selfies.
I mean,
with the there domestic was, terrorists.
And I hope that those police officers are figured out as well. And they are asked some questions and if hopefully they have the right answers, because if not, then they might be in that same unemployment line.
Oh, I would hope they would be headed for the Pinta, not for the unemployment line.
That's true. I mean, there really have been some pretty bad penalties for sedition. So, yeah,
super bad, and, right?
And really, shouldn't we, rather than insurrectionists, I think that that's kind of more on the nose. But
no, domestic terrorists. So they found at least three improvised explosive devices, one on the grounds of the Capitol, one outside the RNC, and another one was mailed to the DNC, right? And those two headquarters buildings are essentially adjacent to the Capitol. They also smuggled firearms into D.C. They smuggled some of those firearms into the protest area itself, and then there were others that they left in their vehicles, including long guns. They're not insurrection. They're domestic terrorists.
All right, we can disagree on that one. But
I mean, they are also guilty of insurrection and sedition, but what they, the way that we should ensure that they are referred to is as domestic terrorists, because most people don't know what an insurrectionist is, but they goddamn know what a terrorist is.
Oh, but here's my thing on that. If you will go back many episodes of Plastic Cup Politics, I will remark that there are no domestic terrorism laws, but there are laws against insurrection.
Also true. Yeah.
Ha! Take that.
Well, but remember, we did make the distinction, right, that there's no law allowing the government to designate you as a domestic terrorist and then right. Do the same things they do to foreign terrorist groups, right? However, there are plenty of laws against the things that domestic terrorists do.
Correct. You are 100% correct. And
but insurrection and sedition is its own special crime.
And maybe with a Democratic president, House, and Senate, maybe we can work on some domestic terrorism laws. Unless you think that's a bad idea still.
Yeah, no, I still kind of think it's a bad idea, to be all honest. Right.
We'll say because that. You can listen to episode 274. Because I would like to get this done at a certain time.
I hear you.
What I really want to keep coming back to is just the welcome to the new GOP. So I was having a conversation and they were saying that, you know, when I said welcome to the new GOP, and they're saying, no, like the fanatics are going to fall away. And it's like, no. You don't get to do that. No. For 4 years, like, well, you know, then maybe they'll be like a center and then they'll have their own party. It'll be like a Trump party. I'm like, oh, and then what elected Republicans are you guys going to kind of convalesce around? And it's going to be your, oh, the, you know, that really stood up to Donald Trump. Oh, wait, I shouldn't have said Republicans, because there are not Republicans there. There's Mitt Romney. And clearly we figured out he can't win for president. So other than that, everybody else, as far as I can know in my head, that is has an R after their name, has curtailed to Donald Trump, and therefore they are a part of this GOP. This is them. If you are going, you cannot shake the devil's hand and then say you were kidding. That does
not shake the devil's hand. They shook his hand. They took his hat and coat. They offered him wine. They, you know, they set him a place at the fucking table. They begged for his favor. They abased themselves before him.
I mean,
they then, even after it was clear that he was done for, They then fell all over themselves to degrade our democracy and threaten all of the freedoms and rights that you and I enjoy to curry favor with his hardcore supporters. They own every last fucking piece of this. Every last bit of it. And none of them, not the politicians, not their regular supporters, right? All of them, to our Republican listeners, you own part of this. This is on you.
That lady that got shot?
Yeah, you own it. That's on you. You put us here. Right? And all the evidence you need, you already cited. Out of all of the representatives in Congress and the Senate, all of the people that you Republicans voted to send to Congress, how many of them, when offered the opportunity to actually punish Trump for something we knew he did wrong, and that many of them acknowledged after voting to acquit him, they still acknowledged they knew he did it, they knew it was wrong, they still didn't vote to acquit him. How many actually voted to hold him accountable? Just one.
On one of the charges.
Yeah, and only on one of the charges, you're right. What did the other responsible Republicans do? Susan Collins from Maine, voted to acquit and said she thought the president had learned a lesson. She said a big lesson, I think. She thought he'd learned a very big lesson. Yeah, the very fucking big lesson he learned was that he could try and extort foreign leaders to take illegal actions to benefit his electoral chances and get away with it. That's what he learned.
Clearly he learned a lesson, because he would never try that kind of shit again with, I don't know, the Attorney General of Georgia.
Secretary of State, but yes, sorry. Exactly. He literally did the exact fucking same thing again and got caught on the phone, on tape, doing it again. And learned the greatest joy I have had for the last few days since that tape came out is all of the tweets directly to Susan Collins basically going, yep, here's the lesson he learned. So yeah, no, you are 100% right. Your friend, my family, all of them fucking own it. You all own it. Every last bit of it. Including what happens next, right? Because it's not over. There's going to be more. Including probably more violence. And they own every last fucking bit of it and should be held accountable in every possible way. Because as we've seen, right, this tendency to want to let bygones be bygones, or to wash it under the rug, or not to agitate his supporters any further, right? Like, it doesn't work. The message it sends is do more. And then they do. And then we're like, oh, yeah, they're doing more, but they're not going to do that really bad thing, right? So let's let it go for now. Let's not rock the boat, blah, 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 blah. It's time to move on. It's time to heal. We're already hearing that kind of bullshit from Biden, time to heal. No, it is time for trials. It is time for prosecutions. It is time for imprisonment. It is time for insurrectionists to learn that there is a price to pay for trying to steal my democracy.
Oh, I don't know if you've heard this one yet, but apparently there's been talk that somebody wants to, I think it's a, is it Ilhan Omar that's...
Oh, Ilhan Omar. She has already drafted articles of impeachment.
Okay. I knew that there was one that did that, and there was somebody else.
And it's the same one. She also drafted a bill basically to expel the members of the House that supported the insurrection, to expel them from Congress.
Yeah.
I doubt the second one will pass. The impeachment actually stands an okay chance of passing, and actually in fairly short order, right? Because we have to talk about, and we should really get to this before we wrap up. So if we're going to wrap up soon, let's jump right into it.
Here we go.
So there are a few avenues that we can take to resolve this, and some are more likely than others, right? Let's start with the two least likely. The two least likely are Donald Trump concedes, quietly serves out his remaining 2 weeks and leaves. It's probably the least likely outcome. of all the outcomes, right? Next least likely is that he does not concede, serves out his 2 weeks, and then, you know, either has to be dragged out of the White House or finally he's like, fuck it, I still didn't lose, but I'm going to leave. And he goes. Those are the two least likely outcomes. Now let's get into the gradations of the most likely outcomes, right? So the three things that are most likely to happen are Donald Trump resigns, right? And most likely if he resigns, it's because someone he trusts from the Senate comes to him and goes, they have the votes. If articles of impeachment pass the House, they can convict you in the Senate. It's time for you to go. And he resigns, right? He rolls the dice on possibly getting a pardon from Pence in his 2 weeks as lame duck president and resigns and leaves the way Nixon did. It's almost exactly what happened with Nixon, right? The Republican leadership from the Senate went to Nixon and goes, we're done. We can't cover you anymore. They have the votes. If impeachment goes to the Senate, you'll be convicted. And so Nixon resigned.
Thanks, Goldwater.
Yeah. That's actually, by the way, a terrible outcome for all of us. And I'll get into why here in a sec. So anyway, the next most likely is that he resigns. I consider that to be fairly unlikely given the psychology of the man that we've seen thus far and the rift he has now created with Mike Pence. Mike Pence is not happy with Donald Trump at the moment.
Well, that was my whole question when I was watching that thing and people kept referring to Mike Pence as Mr. President. And I'm like, are they like kind of saying something?
Yeah, no, they meant President of the Senate. Yeah. But we'll get to that here in a second, too, actually, because there's some shit that happened later that makes that muddy, that makes what you're referring to a little uncertain.
Does it have something to do with the quarter?
No, it has to do. No, it has to do with who authorized the D.C. National Guard to be deployed.
OK,
we'll come back to that in a sec. So the next most likely outcome is that Mike Pence and the appointed percentage of cabinet officers from the Trump administration vote to invoke Article 25 of the Constitution and expel him from office.
Hey, that's 25 cents, which is a quarter.
Oh, all right. So there we go. we'll come back to that. I consider that to also be fairly unlikely because we have to think about who would have to cooperate in that endeavor. And it is the sycophants that are serving temporary appointments, right? They haven't even been confirmed as heads of these cabinet positions. We would be dependent upon people like Pompeo.
Who wants to be president? He would totally do it.
No.
Safe face?
Still wouldn't do it.
Okay.
Nope. Don't see it happening.
All right.
So he is a disgusting opportunist, definitely wants to be president, would love to ride Donald Trump's coattails there. But what he is also is a dyed-in-the-wool fanatic. He is a far right-wing evangelical Christian who absolutely would not take that step. He just wouldn't do it. He reveres the sort of barbaric and bullshit steps Donald Trump has taken over the last 4 years so much, there's no way. It won't happen. But he doesn't necessarily need to be a part of it, but the rest of them are almost as bad, right? Do you really see Betsy DeVos at this point voting to invoke Article 25?
No, she has no need to.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
And so that's what I was kind of figuring out. I was like, who has political aspirations from here? Those might be the only ones you could get to join on to an Article 25.
Yeah. So what at this moment, and I'll admit I could totally be wrong. My confidence level in this is not super high. But at this moment, what I consider actually to be the most likely outcome is that articles of impeachment pass the House and are affirmed in the Senate, and he gets impeached. And that is actually the best case scenario. And the reason it's the best case scenario is that if he is impeached and convicted in the Senate, he is ineligible to run ever again.
All right.
So I am at least hopeful on that score, but in every other way, I am heartbroken for my country and for my countrymen. And this is one occasion where there is absolutely no pleasure in saying that I was right.
And I will leave you with this. One of my friends on Facebook was watching everything going on, and she says that she now has like a flinch when she sees the American flag, and that it doesn't have the connotation that it once did. And I pushed back on that really, really hard, because it's that flag that they're using isn't the flag that they're really under. When I see that flag, it's a completely different thing than when I see, like, seeing a Confederate flag in the Capitol. That hurts. That's not right. Like, when I see a Confederate flag, a Nazi flag, or a MAGA banner from noon on the 7th day of our year 2021, if I see any MAGA shit, I'm associating you with those two previous flags. And you know what? The American flag was flown above the people who fought and died to defeat those other flags, and the flag that was above the people who voted out that banner. And you know, so be proud of that flag.
You've got to add one in there.
Uh-huh.
You've got to, and this one is the worst one, right? Because it's actually a perversion of the American flag. It's part of why your friend now has a flinch. And it's that thin blue line flag. You know how that flag, and here's the thing, even if you are a supporter of law enforcement, and I know in some ways you still are.
Yes.
I probably less so. You know, I'm certainly not as militant about it as some people we know. But I see a lot less value in contemporary law enforcement than you do at this point. But even if you are still a law enforcement supporter, from today forward, you know for a certainty that anyone who sees you flying that flag or that sticker isn't going to think you love cops. They're going to think you're a Nazi. And why will they think that? Because all over the news and social media right now is video of a crowd, a mob, attacking a line of DC police officers. And two of the people in that mob are carrying thin blue line flags. One of them actually swings the flagpole with the thin blue line flag on it at a fucking cop. Don't ever fucking tell me again that flag or those stickers represents anything other than white supremacy, because that's what it is. It has nothing to do with supporting the police. Never did.
And if you would like to interact with the show, you can do so at Plastic Cup Pod, your favorite social media platforms.
That was slick. I like that.
Hit the subscribe button however you're listening. I usually say Spotify, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. And then I know that we have a new one, which is Google Podcasts.
Amazon.
Or something. Amazon. Yeah. Find us on Amazon. I will hopefully get this out to you guys pretty quick. But guess what? No matter what happened, I'm very happy. I'm going to turn the TV back on, and hopefully we are through this Arizona bullshit, and they have certified this, and everybody's back down. Because, oh, man, let me tell you, I was like, oh, they're going to come back. Let's see what happens. And then it was, okay, Vice President Pence, nice speech, man. Like, thank you, concise, hit it, let's get to work. McConnell. You're fucked hard. You're complacent in this. Eat some shit. Okay, cool. All right. Oh, shit. Okay. Schumer. Okay, you go. And then it was like, okay, then the next guy. And then the next guy. I'm like, wasn't this vote supposed to be over like hours ago? Don't these people have places to go? Don't they have homes? Like, wasn't this a stressful day? Can't they just all be like.
This is how they're letting it out, though, man.
Oh, you mean like that's their podcast?
Yeah.
Oh.
This is them releasing that tension from the day. Because think about the pictures that we saw, right? Like, the really interesting ones are the few brief shots you saw of the actual, like, the emergency subway escape rail that goes to the congressional bunker. Did you see those pictures? They show them actually putting them into the cars. They're basically like they're old rail cars. Each one has four seats. And then they have sort of a plexiglass barrier around the outside of them. They put them in there and it automatically whisks them off to the shelter, the congressional shelter, super interesting to fucking see that. It's really cool. But a lot of the other pictures we saw were of, for example, a couple of Capitol police officers who have their weapons drawn and pointed at the door to the House chamber, which has been barricaded shut with a giant wooden bureau, right? And you can see one of the maggots peeking through a hole in the door, and he sees the he's basically looking down the barrel of a handgun and ducks back.
Here's like, Johnny.
Yeah, that's some traumatizing shit, man. And so I think like congressional leadership made the call that like, yeah, this was supposed to be the Arizona debate was supposed to be over a while ago. We should probably give these people an opportunity to sort of let out that what Whitman would call the barbaric yelp, right? That cleansing yell.
I understand. So hopefully they only had the 2 hours to go through that shit. So everybody else should. So everything from here on out is just, and then we're out.
Because guess what? Better be.
Guys, we're out.
Nice. Whoa!